this week, on the 23rd of June 2002, rejected by the Ryman League, the Dons were voted into the Combined Counties League instead, with the new club already having 450 season ticket holders and King's Meadow to use as a home ground. They were quickly installed as favourites to win the title. And their first season in the league, comprising mainly of teams from Surrey, Hampshire, Berkshire and West London. Our journey keeps going. We keep continuing. We are the same old Wombles. We're back. Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the Same Old Wombles podcast, another one of our special summer's podcasts. And Adam is loving it because, you know, we love to have a little bit of a break. And so far, we've just kept on going through the summer. I'd like to welcome Morn Frere, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you doing?
Doing well, Matthew. How are you?
Very well. Thank you very much. Slightly tired, but that's for another day.
See, I don't even get asked how well I'm doing. I basically just got told, carry on editing the podcast for the whole of the summer. That's really, you know, not on, surely.
And he's jumped in there before I can give an intro. But our man on the buttons, the producer, Dr. Adam Proctor. How are you doing, sir?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. And this week, unfortunately, our football guru, Mark Lewis, coming with us, but we have another Mark, and it's a pleasure to introduce the wonderful AFC Wimbledon fan, Mark Thomas. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much.
Excellent.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Well, I try and do every day. I try and keep up, make sure everyone's all right. So, yeah, it's been an interesting time since we got promoted up to League One. It's all fun and games, and obviously what happens on socials. And I know, Adam, you won't see this, and I'm sure, Mark, I don't know if you're on the wonderful X platform anymore, so you'll miss all the fun and games.
I am not on the X platform. I'm on Blue Sky, so there's a lot of handcrafted tweets on Blue Sky. You know, not so much the cut and thrust of X.
Yeah, it's good fun. But basically what happens is that because we haven't signed anyone for 2 weeks, apart from today, obviously, welcome Alistair Smith back.
Isn't that bloody great?
Oh, that is fantastic.
You know what? I was watching the, because I love him because he's awkward.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's awkward for the opposition. I love watching him play. It's just like he gets in there and it's like they don't quite know how to handle him. But he scores goals from the most odd angles. It's bloody marvellous.
Yeah, like the goal in the game against Notts County, the home game, where it's just like, what was going on there? It's sort of ricocheting around at the edge of the box. Boom. Yeah, he does. And he scored a great goal against Doncaster as well. Fantastic signing. But we saw a little something he put up on X, which fortunately missed, a little video that he did, which seemed a bit weird. It's like a showreel or something like that. So I'm delighted that we got him over the line. But the thing is that as soon as we haven't signed a player, everyone on that platform just goes crazy. It's just like, oh, we haven't signed anybody. I know the best solution is to sell the club out.
Yeah. Look, this is the thing. This is going to come as a shock to some Wimbledon fans, but I love Wimbledon, but I don't think I know more than the manager. I know this will come as a shock to some people that someone follows Wimbledon and doesn't think they know more than the manager, but that's what I feel.
Mark, you're in good company here because my record of having managed a team before, and I will never be ever amongst my small peer of football playing people be forgiven for playing three left backs in the same game. So, like, I will freely admit to not knowing much more than the manager.
I'm not sticking to that, and there will be occasions in the coming season where I might indicate otherwise.
But isn't that the right as a football fan? I was just thinking that we're incredibly flippant. You know, one minute the best team in the world. Next thing, it's all doom and gloom. It's just, that is what being a supporter's like.
Yeah, I think you're right. Sorry, Noel.
I was going to say, Matt, that's what you call the difference between Gillingham away and Notts County away. is that will be the flippant moment, because we were shocking against Gillingham, and then we were the mighty, mighty, wonderful Dons that we all love right to our core away at Notts County. So, you know, yes, totally.
Yeah, it's what we do. It is that thing, which, and I wonder how that is as a manager or a player to have that, to sort of like to notice 1 minute everyone's saying how bad everything is, and the next it's like, this is the most amazing team ever.
But do you remember the Crewe game? I think it was Crewe, 3-0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the mood was skittish. The mood was skittish. It was just, the fans were just so happy and just so, just sort of like, you know, when and then Goodman did a little bounce in front of the goal and everyone's heart went out. You
Yes,
know what I
yes.
mean? And
Yeah.
those moments, you think, yeah, they're just as important as, you know, I've forgotten who we were playing, but it was where James Tilley scored in extra time from the edge of the box, one of the most beautiful goals of the season.
Yeah.
And people had walked out, people had left, people thought we're done.
Yeah.
You know, and actually both of those experiences are really, really exciting and really important.
Mark,
Yeah,
I've got
it's
to ask. I've got to ask Mark. I know Matt's going to come to this question, but I'm just going to jump in anyway.
no, no, cool.
How did you become a Wimbledon fan? Because I speaking to Kevin Day, and Kevin
Yeah,
Day
yeah.
said that you basically didn't give a, you'd fallen out of love with football. You didn't give a toss about football. It was the worst thing ever. And basically, the next time he talks to you, you're like the diehard AFC Wimbledon fan who thinks AFC Wimbledon's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I paraphrase slightly, but not very much, as you know, Kevin. That's not a big paraphrasing. But like, what happened there, Mark?
I think what happened was very simple. My journey to it is slightly odd, which is I, as a kid, all my uncles and my family were Chelsea fans, and there was a lot of kind of, you know, sit outside the pub, packet of crisps, you know, pineapple juice, and all of that, and I didn't like it. I just didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy going to Chelsea at all. I just didn't like the atmosphere there. I didn't particularly like the proximity of the game where you were just so far away. And I kind of just went, ah, oh, that's done, that's done, that's done. What was fascinating for me was when the Dons, when AFC Wimbledon emerged, and people talked to me right at the beginning and said, will you come and do a benefit? I remember that, but Mark Watson was on it. It was at the Wimbledon Theatre. There was Kevin, Mark Watson, Mark Steele, me. Who else was? Were you there? That benefit for
Wait a
that.
minute. There was the wasn't oh, it was the guy who was in goal. He played in goal briefly for Southend. He's Southend fan.
Terry Alton.
That's the one. Yeah.
Terry Alderson was there. Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of came along because I thought, well, you can't shut a club down and move it 60 miles away. That's just absolutely ridiculous. I just thought, for me, it was the idea that actually you go, no, we're not going to have this. We're going to form our own club. And I was like, that I'm interested in. That I'm interested in. Fan-owned football, I'm interested in. And actually, it's become slightly obsessive, as friends of mine would say, you know, typically so. Like, I love going to see fan-owned football. I really love it. I went to see Clapton. I went to see a game at Whitehawk. Do you know what I mean? I did a fundraiser at Whitehall. I've done one at Clapton. I did one over in, I went to see Clydebank in Scotland. Have you ever been up there?
No. You see,
Oh, man, it's fantastic. The atmosphere is fantastic because
oh.
it's so rough and ready. The club shop is literally a shipping container, but it's not like a Shoreditch shipping container. It's someone dragged it off the side of the Clyde with a forklift. Do you know what I mean?
Oh.
And it's so exciting there. And all the ultras are nine. They're all nine. They've all made their own flags. They're all
Oh.
trying, banging away. And I promise you, one bloke, this is completely true. One bloke turns up and he starts waving his flag. And his mates are just like, what's that? He said, it's my bed sheet. And you could see the elasticated corners, right? And one of them shouts, does your ma know you've done that? Shut up. And I love that. Do you know what I mean? I love that feeling there. The excitement. The fact that the terrace was just full of mums and toddlers and kids in prams and uncles and somebody who'd snuck in a can and a fag and wasn't looking the right way and gets the ball in the face. Do you know what I mean? All of that kind of stuff is wildly exciting for me. I love that. And that feeling of ownership, the feeling of community that you get in those places.
Yeah.
I've done benefits down in at Whitehawk FC, right? Now, Whitehawk is a council estate and its life expectancy is 10 years less than the rest of Brighton, right? It's got a stigma attached to it to come from Whitehawk. They have got, right, you look at the club, they do benefits for the East Brighton Food Co-op. Now, the East Brighton Food Co-op kicked off during or just before COVID-19. And a local guy, lovely bloke, actually, he was a fruit and veg market stall holder in the East End, moved down to Brighton onto the estate. And a couple of people he sensed were kind of like frightened of the lockdown because there's only a couple of shops on the estate. They're like premiers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said, how would people feel if I set up a Meals on Wheels service? Right. Now, this is true. Right. He put out a request. People responded. He didn't have a kitchen. He didn't have any fund. He didn't have anything. He knows where there's a council kitchen that's disused in a block. And he knows the caretaker. And he gets hold of a copy of the keys and he copies them. And he squats a kitchen. And he talks to all these supermarkets and all these kind of cruise ships and all this kind of stuff. And on day one of the lockdown, they fed 400 people. 400 people got fresh, cooked a meal every day during lockdown. And because he was getting stuff out of cruise ships, people on a council estate got lobster. They got lobster. And I'm like, how can you not love this? This is part of the community. That's what it is.
And this is the thing. This is what's interesting, because I'm not sure about other clubs, but I know that fan-owned clubs, that's part of their thing, is that they are embedded in the community. And through, like, the pandemic was the biggest thing, because that's where D-Lag came out. I mean, and look at what it's doing. Look at what it did in the pandemic, but what it's continuing to do today, feeding the local population.
It's figures that it put out recently are just magnificent. And I love the fact that GPs work with us and go, right, we'll come out. If you can get referred by a GP, and that's it. Do you know? Yeah. None of this other stuff about you need to be means tested, we need to check you, we need to make sure you're not getting more than... That's it.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah. And so that's interesting, because you've seen that at Whiteleaf, you've seen that at Clydebank. Are other clubs doing it? I mean, I'm assuming, you know, like, it can't just be fans-owned clubs that are doing this, that are in the community. And Niall, you know this because you work in the community. You work with like fan fair game clubs. So I'm sure a lot of them, like in Grimsby, I think that they're doing a lot of work up there.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've got is you've got football clubs. When you've got an owner that sees themselves as a custodian, that is very different. And those are the kind of clubs that are close to. I think there's always going to be something special about a fan-owned club, right? That's always going to be unique. But you've got custodians at Lincoln, you've got custodians at Grimsby that are doing amazing stuff, right? So they look at themselves as being, what am I doing in the community? How can I help the community? That's what they see themselves as part of that. And I mean, the long-term sustainability of a football club is always going to be better if you're embedded in your community. And so these are clubs that think long-term, think sensibly, rationally, and think about what it means to put on, in Grimsby's case, that black and white shirt. You know, what it means for the whole of that community, and Lincoln, the red and white shirt, you know, that's what it is. And so what I've loved about what we've seen at Wimbledon, as we're a fan-owned club, is the growing number of people that are putting on the blue shirt of Wimbledon and feeling proud of it. Or if you wear an AFC Wimbledon shirt and you go around, you know, the story and the kind of goodwill you get because of that shirt, that's the special. And that's because of our story. And that's, you only get that with the fan-owned club, but the next bit is the clubs that are custodians, because they also value the community. And that's what I love about it. You know, when Mark talks about what makes it special, you know, I've said on this podcast a number of times, when you look at Plough Lane and you go, well, that seat and that blade of grass We built that. And that's our blood, sweat, and tears. And that's our little two fingers up to the establishment. And I absolutely adore that.
I mean, I have to say, when I wrote to my local MP recently about the football regulator, I actually said, I write to you as a football club owner. Because that's what we are.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And I'm like, I'm so proud of that. I love that. Look, I mean, the importance of being in the community is... you asked me how I got to be here. I want to tell you one quick thing before we return to the community.
Cool.
I think it's related, which is I was doing some work on the Chagos Islands for a show that I was doing. Chagos Islands is was part of sort of Mauritius or was connected to that, and Seychelles in that area. And when decolonisation happened, they kept the Chagos, Britain kept the Chagos Islands, and it then gave it to, they gave the big island, Diego Garcia, to America for their air base. So that's a massive base down there. And people have been fighting for the right to return. People from the island were thrown off. They were kicked out of the island.
Yep.
And I was thinking, I was writing some stuff about it, and someone got in contact and goes, are you aware that Chagos has got its own national football team? I said, really? They said, yeah, in Crawley. And I was like, really? And I went down to see them and chatted to the people there. And do you know what I loved? And it's what I loved was people go, we'll set up our national football team in the expectation that our country will come shortly after. Isn't that a magnificent thing? And I watched them play. You know, there's the, it was CONIFA, you know, the sort of stateless states World
yeah,
Cup.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Right. And they've got people like, you know, they have Punjab in there. They have Kurdistan in there. They have Cornwall. Cornwall was in there. And because Cornwall was in there, Yorkshire wanted to be there. like we're so Yorkshire, but they got rejected. Anyway, the thing was, it was like watching the importance of that team. You see the community. There's a big Chagosian community in Crawley, and they would come out and watch the team, and they would, regardless of the quality of the football, they regarded it as an extension of themselves and their aspiration. And that really rung a bell for me. That really rung a bell for me. So I live around the corner from Plough Lane. So when Plough Lane reopened, I'm like, I can't not go. I took my partner to one game. It was a pre-season friendly. It was Portsmouth. And we won 5-3. It was the most magnificent. It went backwards and forwards. It was so exciting. It was unbelievable. And she turned to me at the end and said, that was amazing. Is it like that every week? And I went, yeah, I guess.
Every week.
It's so funny you should say that, because a friend of mine is this big Sunderland fan, and he will often rib me about stuff. But occasionally he'll get to a point where he says, I kind of forget that Wimbledon is part of your identity, and so realises there's a line that he can't cross, because he sees that it's more than just football for me, because of all those extended parts that what football can bring. And you know, he's a big Sunderland fan, so is his family and his dad, etc. But he doesn't have that same connection, and I think that's an amazing thing for us, and I love it.
I talked to a chap, you'd know him, he's a lovely chap. I see him around the place and often have a little chat. He's slightly older than me, which is over 60. And I was sort of doing that kind of like, well, if we work hard, I think we could get up and blah, 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 blah. And then in a decade's time, blah, 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 we'd be up in championship. And he just went, no, we're about right where we need to be. We're about right. We're about where we should be. He said, the thing is, he said, never underestimate the importance of being able to walk from your home to the ground. And I thought, and it really resonated with me. It really, really resonated with me that this was a ritual not that went beyond just something we do every other week. It was a ritual that resonates with where you are and where you are in your community and where your club is. The only time I felt anything like it was I went to see Hibs versus Dundee up at the during the Edinburgh Festival. The night before, I should say, I'd gone to see Stravinsky's opera of Oedipus. The tickets cost about the same price, and there was about the same amount of drama. It was one, do you know what I mean? It was the occasional moments of magic and moments of, I don't know what the fuck is going on, right? So, but the walk to Easter Road Stadium was just thrilling. Just being part of that crowd, it was great. And it I think there's a really important thing that embeds us in the community, and it's all those little rituals, all those little things that connect you to a club, to a community, to the community's aspiration. And in some ways, the club represents the community's aspirations.
Yes, I think, and we are so much more than a football team. We are that community thing. I always think that we are that flag bearer, and we have been throughout our life, to be honest with you. We've always been, as Wimbledon FC, we were kind of like a flag bearer for the underdog. And now, as AFC Wimbledon, now reformed status AFC Wimbledon, we're like I feel like a flag bearer for community football, and that being that sense of pride. So for me, that badge that you Mark are wearing on your shirt, and Adam you're wearing on yours, it's such a badge of honour that I'm really proud to wear it now. I mean, I'm proud to be seen out when I go away on holiday. I'm always proud. I'll always wear my top.
Do you know, it's a funny thing, because I'll there's various routines I do on stage about football. And if I mention AFC Wimbledon, I can guarantee every other gig, someone in the audience will go, proper club.
Yep. Yeah.
A real recognition of the journey and what we are.
But here's an interesting thing. My sense is that I think a lot of fans would love to be in the situation we're in, to have that connection with their team. You know, so after a game, they're going to be, the players going to be around, they're going to be accessible to you. You're so close to the pitch, you know. Well, I feel like we've got a real connection there. And everything we do, you know, like if we're putting up anything in the stadium, we're consulted with, we're part of that decision-making process. So anything that goes on, it's a decision, you know. And we appoint representatives who sit on the Don's Trust board who are making those decisions for us as fans, you know. And one of the wonderful, wonderful things at Wembley was that a lot of the people who were offered positions in the director's box, you know, sort of like, they said, no, I don't want to sit in the director's box for the match. I want to sit amongst the fans. It's a beautiful thing.
We sit next to, as a season ticket holder, we sit next to two people who are on the board. And that, what Matt just said, is absolutely spot on. You know, they actually had to drag to get one of the Don's Trust board to sit in the Royal Box, because all of them wanted to be in the stands. Not one of them wanted to be actually in the Royal Box, taking up that kind of free bit, because it's not what our ethos is. And for us, we're massive champions of fan ownership on this pod. And it's like, it's those sort of moments, it's your kind of connection, Mark, that it's that depth of feeling that I think is absolutely unique amongst the Wimbledon fans, because it's that total, like, it means something more. You know, we talk a bit about that. It's a bit like we're all veterans of the franchise move and stuff like that. So we all have a deep level of PTSD as well, because it's still the trauma for us. It still hurts. You know, I was speaking just a day or two ago with Mick Buckley, and Mick was saying on that, and forgive me, Mick, for mentioning you here, but Mick was saying he won't really ever feel happy until we're back in the championship and that whole circle's complete, because we're not there yet. You know, that's like, that's when we had our place. So he still sees that as a still an inner hurt, because we were robbed. We were like, you know, our whole identity was stolen. And that's when he feels that it will be complete. And he feels his job isn't complete yet.
It's really interesting, this idea that the club has a journey, and it's not just about what cups we've got. You know, it's about taking everyone with you.
Yeah.
Right? And that's really important. One of the things that really struck me was I was talking to Kevin Day, who you know, and Kevin did the walk from all the London football clubs, you know, raising money for charity. And of course, he got to Wimbledon, and he was asking people if they'd meet him outside. And me and Paul Barros, who used to be on the comedy circuit, wonderful chap, Paul. We met him at Wimbledon, and we were talking to someone who was just saying, "Oh, we've got to hurry up, we've got to hurry up." And they facilitated, you know, Hayden coming out, you know, photographs on the center spot, all that kind of stuff. And it was really exciting and really wonderful. And the guy was going, "I've got to move, I've got to move, I'm late." And I was saying, What are you late for? And he said, "I'm teaching." I said, "Oh, well, I thought you worked for the club." He said, "Yeah, I do. But I also I teach kids who are hard to reach in English and maths. Because I wear the badge, I can walk in there and it gives me a bit more leeway, a bit more impact with those kids to learn." That's magnificent.
Yeah, it is beautiful. I mean, I think we're all accused of being quite woke. That's you know,
Only a
and
little
that's
bit.
also yeah, that's also a badge that we wear. So whenever these come out, you know, we're gonna get we'll get that in our faces because
That's why I
you
don't go
know,
on the X, because I don't want to see that stuff.
but that's what you know. That's but we are you know, we're our advocates of fan ownership. But that doesn't mean everyone goes, the you'd rather be fan owning in non-league. It's not, no, we want to be successful. We want to be the flag bearer for fan ownership. We want to say it this works. It could work for you.
I think you're absolutely right. Wouldn't it be magnificent? I mean, it's fantastic. There's a fan-owned team in League One. That's fantastic. What's brilliant is they're in the rear window now. They're in the rear mirror. Do you know what I mean? That's fantastic. That's brilliant. Wouldn't it be amazing to be a fan-owned team in the Championship?
That's it. I mean, and I think that's it. There's going to be the business conversation about how we get there. Because as soon as we start saying we're looking for the championship, people go, "Well, we can't do it as purely fan owned. We'll have to go down to at least 50 plus one, or you know, there's other ways of selling out."
This is
But
where Matt, right? You know, I'm going to mention the football regulator. You know that's coming. And so the football governance bill, because we didn't talk about it much last week, finished its committee stage last week. And in there was this link between the State of the Game report and the football distribution deal, which the regulator is potentially going to have the oversight of. Now, what that means is that if that State of the Game report, which I've been speaking to loads of football financial academics. All of them, without fail, are going to, whoever they pick from the expert panel, they're all going to say, and the conclusion of that report will be, there's a massive problem with the financial gap between the divisions, and that you need to cap clubs that spend more than they earn. All of that is massive good news for AFC Wimbledon developing because we are a sustainable club. We actually do things the right way. Anything that they change in terms of that distribution deal, anything at all in that particular direction, is going to benefit us. That makes us, as a potential club that could move into the Championship, a possibility that never existed before, really. And I think that realism, that ability to do that, would just be phenomenal. And like, you know, I'm with Mick Buckley, it would be like proper two fingers up. Sorry, Adam.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's obviously really important, and we know that, you know. We all are big fans of what you're doing with the football regulator, and I think that's important. But the other thing to say is that obviously, so obviously last week we had Graham Stacey come on talk about this idea of setting up something to donate to the first team's first men's players budget for the January window to keep us as competitive as possible. And I think, he got a little bit of stick, you know, because he suggested that we were asking people obviously to donate again, etc., and all that kind of stuff. But I tell you what, like I've been fortunate to be invited into that group to try and help that start, you know, to kick that off this season. And the amount of people that are in that group and the things that people are doing for, you know, out of their spare time, etc. I'm cutting, you know, social media things, hopefully that we can launch all that kind of stuff because I want to donate. I want other people to think about donating. And that there's way more voices that are saying that's what I want to do. If I can afford to put in a cup of coffee a week or whatever it is, I want to do that. And there's the few dissenters who are like, we need to sell out to stay in this place. You know, it's silly. So I think I think all of that, the Football Governance Bill will do one thing for lots of clubs, including a fan-owned club. But the fact that we are fan-owned continues to, and as you guys know, mean that many of us will donate, will tip up, will do things, will spend extra money, etc. As everyone here knows, if we change that model, I'm never coming to watch Wimbledon again. You know, so
it's a bit, I think, Adam, so crucial, because it's like, it is the fans that the depth of love at AFC Wimbledon means that if the football's bubble was to burst, we're in a better place than everybody else, because we'll stand by it, because we're not dependent on all the rest of it. And there will be people that will say, right, well, actually, I'll give up my cup of coffee a week, you know, put that into the club, all these little bits, and we'll stand by it. And we'll be like, well, you know, Adam's are like an IT, you know, IT, like, esports whiz and all the rest of it, right in the middle of all of that. He'll do his bit. You know, we've all got something we can offer. And that's where I think, as a fan's own club, that's where we step in. And that's what makes us more secure. So that's what I think I love about us.
You'll know more about this than I will know, but I was talking to someone the other day who was talking about Wolves and about how their ownership, I believe, is connected to the Chinese state. And they said they were doing quite well. They seemed to be spending, and then suddenly it stopped because the Chinese state changed their policy on economics. And it's like, your football team's dependent on what the president of China reckons. No, get out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was exactly the issue. So we had the conversation, and it's still kind of in about state-owned football clubs. Well, morally, right, I'm against state-owned football clubs. That's my personal view, morally. But like, if you look at about the financial sustainability of a club being state-owned, you're totally at the whim of a politician thousands of miles away from you. So like, at one point, Saudi Arabia might go, actually, sports washing is a shit thing, and therefore we're going to stop investing. Newcastle and shit instantly. Or the UAE could the same. We might put sanctions on the UAE for some reason or another. Right, and that's Man City instantly in trouble. So you're looking at all of these things. I mean, apart from the moral argument, which I could go in for a long time on both of those, they are financially unsustainable purely because they're state-owned. And that would be the same with Wolves in China.
Yeah, I mean, and now, because, you know, the global situation is so fragile, how, you know, and that's that football's a small part of that. But, you know, it could, you know, what happens...
I don't think you can blame the next football for where we are at the moment.
No, I don't. I'm just... I'm saying that football
over the ground in Tehran, that didn't happen, did it?
No, but what I'm saying is that, you know, global politics can play a part in how clubs are financed.
Mark, you've got to realise that we are quite woke, and if there's ever an opportunity to have a go at Donald Trump in some loose way, then we're up for it.
Mate, I'm there. I am there. Mango Mussolini. I am totally up for the kicking.
He's just started though, Mark. He's just started. He's been in post for what, 2 or 3 months. He's just got going.
Do you know what's amazing? Some people, I was reading some articles where people were trying to work out his strategy, and I'm like, he hasn't got a strategy.
No, there isn't one.
And people try and find a strategy because it makes them feel better, because they think if he's got a strategy, someone will find a better strategy and we'll be able to fight it, instead of going, oh, he could be a narcissistic, ego, monomaniacal fucking idiot, bone spur fucker, you know, who's mad with possibly a dash of syphilitic brain damage. I don't know.
This is pure speculation. And by the way, that for our legal team, that's all allegedly.
No.
But this is another interesting thing, because I think the thing with AFC Wimbledon and our structure is that, oddly, we appeal to the left and right. Because for the left, we are about, it's about fan ownership, it's about community coming together, sticking two fingers up to the elite and carrying on saying, this is our, whatever you've done, sod that, this is our club, we're going to carry on. And to some people on the right, it's like, you know what, this is a prime example of thriving local business. You know, these people have come together and they've established something. And also, what I think the right sometimes quite like is that it's volunteers doing stuff. So the state doesn't have to do it. State doesn't have to pay for something. So
It's
volunteers can go out.
Cameron's big society. You know, they're quite like that. But
So
actually,
that.
go on. Sorry.
No. I mean, I think it's quite. So it's quite interesting having you on and knowing that someone like Jeff Norcott, who famously sort of promotes himself as a right-wing stand-up, although I think his views are slightly more liberal than what's going on at the moment. But yeah, it's I think that's quite an interesting thing that how we appeal.
Look, I mean, I understand. Like, there'll be people who come to the games and they'll have got a crap job. They'll have got a crap job and they'll have had a crap week doing stuff they don't want to see, don't want to do. And then they come to see a game, and what they want more than anything else is to win, to make everything right. All of it. I don't know anyone who turns up going, "Well, I hope we draw." Do you know? But you know, it's like we all want it, we want to, but for some people, I understand for some people, the win is bigger. But I think there is that, as we've been talking about here, if it's a difference between being a fan-owned club and being a club that's upper league, but actually owned by whatever hedge fund in whatever country, I'm out.
We all are, Mark, on this podcast, totally.
Yeah.
Just to go back on that very key point you did make there is that Adam did once actually say that we should lose because it would be beneficial. He had to do a public apology for that. And if you go back a couple of weeks, you'll hear that public apology because Adam said that, you know,
Ooh.
maybe it would be better if we didn't win the playoffs. But admittedly, that was a long time ago. And Adam, if you want to apologise for that again, you're welcome to.
Look, I was just saying that financially, getting through to the playoff final was very good, and financially we'd be better off staying in League Two. That's what I was trying to say. I was wrong. I admit it. You know, I didn't mean to say that. We, of course, deserve to be in League One.
Can I just say, this is the nearest I've come to witnessing Mao's compulsory self-declarations of wrongdoing.
I was trying
And
to be
that's
realistic. I
the
was trying to be
philosophy we worked in.
realistic. I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong. Sorry.
I think sometimes people do hedge, and some, you know, I heard those conversations before the playoffs where people go, "Well, you know, we don't want to go up to it. Are we ready to go up?" And it's like, well, if we win, obviously we're ready. Do you know, that's the end of it, you know.
When are you
We
ever
won.
ready? When are you ever ready? I mean, like, you know, we could hang around forever and just go, it's now our time. You've got to take this moment.
But I can understand people protecting their heart a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just going,
Yeah.
I don't want to hope because if it crashes.
Yeah, that's right. Always think of
Yeah, but
the.
that's just the kind of, like, you know, all of us having experienced all that PTSD, all that hurt from before, trying not to go through it again. And it's just like, you
That
know,
was the great thing for me on the final was that I wasn't expecting us to win. I wasn't worrying about us winning. I just went and enjoyed the day with my family, and to win was just in the whole. It was just amazing because I wasn't stressing about the fact that I wanted us to win. I was just like, this is great, and I'm not. I haven't actually experienced that, I don't think, for a long time, really, in football, because you always want to win.
For me, there was a really. There's been a couple of games where the depth of it has really made itself apparent. One of the games is when we played them, and we beat them 3-0. Maycock's brace towards the end were just. Is that first goal is? I was looking at it the other day. It's absolute beauty. It's lovely, you know. And I was found myself by the edge of the pitch. And I was hugging, and you'll know him, Rob. I was hugging Rob. He's a teacher, lovely, lovely fella. And I was hugging him, and I felt my face was wet, and it was wet with his tears, tears of utter joy.
That's interesting. That one there, that 3-0 was brilliant because we'd suddenly swept them aside. But were you there at the game where we won in the last minute?
Yeah, the
Ronan Curtis last minute
with
winner.
the with Noah,
Yes,
with Noah in the corner. I mean, I was actually in Australia, but I was watching just like
That was that because that for me, I've never felt even at the playoff victories, I've never felt so much joy that and a real outpouring of emotions and literally hugging strangers who are hugging and everyone. It was just such an amazing moment. That moment, that singular moment, I think has been one of the best footballing moments in my life.
I mean, from the other side of the world, I was in tears. I was in utter tears. I mean, every part of it. And what when he picked up little Noah, for me that became part of the story, because it was about someone instinctively going, "Oh, he needs a hand." You know, and it was instinctive. And that was magnificent. The other part of the story was seeing Josh Nursevill with the two corner flags.
Oh,
I
yeah,
mean
dear me.
that reaction was on absolutely every channel. And I'm also I sit on the executive board of the Union of European Clubs, and I got so many messages of support from all these clubs, and they're from like Azerbaijan and Spain and Belgium and Denmark and all sorts of Malta, all sorts of weird places. And they were all saying, "I've seen that video," and like that is football. That kind of phrase, that is football. That is what football's about. And it was like, those people get it. People who get that raw, because it was raw emotion on that. That you're right. That Josh Nerfield, that Noah being swapped. I mean, Noah now obviously is the legend at Wimbledon because of all of it. It's brilliant.
Whenever he comes on the pitch, like people cheer in that
Yeah.
area. It's just fantastic.
That corner is where we sit. So we sit directly above Noah. So like, Noah always gets
Oh, I'm
around the
just
course
round the
most of
corner. I'm in 133.
God, what are we? Funny, I
I don't
wish I
know
could
what we
remember our
are.
numbers. Yeah.
Anyway, all this chat of that excitement, I'm still never going to watch them. So you're never going to see me at any of those games. Never mind.
So I mean, I missed that 1-0 that we were all talking about there, and like I am I'm a reluctant goer. I will never go to their ground ever. I won't ever give them any money because it's still like it's football's big wrong, isn't it, in my mind. I mean, there are a lot of wrongs in the world, but that's a pretty big one. And when you talk about, can we talk about not being a rivalry, but if you're talking about a club that exists purely because the other club exists, and you have complete, it's like the world's biggest, worst divorce ever. And that's where it is.
It's not rivalry.
No, it's not rivalry, and that, and I think we always get annoyed when that when the football commentators describe it as either a rivalry or even worse, a derby.
It's definitely not a derby.
It's a fucking travesty. And
that's how they
I
describe
mean,
it.
that's why I can't go, because I just can't go to either, because I just can't deal with what would happen.
I get that. I know a bloke who just goes, "Oh, they shouldn't exist. I'm not going to see an existential game."
Yeah, I think he sits next to us, to be honest with you.
Well, you guys have seen how excited I get at a normal game. You don't want to see me at that kind of game.
I always think of that game being the one where, because I remember being on the Donstrasse board, we used to talk about that game and the prospect. It was before even we played them the first time, on, and the prospect. And they said the worst thing about it is the police didn't really get it, and we would have to explain to them. So the thing is with that game is the emotions are so high that it could be a granny sitting in a corner flag that loses the plot, because that's how raw it is, and that's how to kind of explain it, because it is. That's how much it means. Absolutely everybody's pent up. So like Adam, who is like an emotional roller coaster sitting behind us on a Saturday, if he goes to that game, then it'd be like God knows what it'd be like.
It is weird, and I've got to ask for you, Mark. Do you? I mean, you've got to make a career. You could make a living. Go around gigging all over the place, doing some wonderful work. I mean, honestly, the stuff you're talking about, seeing these football clubs and whatever, I just feels like that needs to be a podcast or a show or something, you've got to get that commission somewhere. I think
Oh,
to hear that
mate,
would
you
think
know
would
what?
be
If
brilliant.
I'm game on. I'm up for it. I mean, I just think it's because like Partick Thistle have gone now, you know, and you're like, this is bloody marvellous. This is fantastic. This is what should be happening. This is what you know this. You've been studying this. You're the expert on this. This is the blood in a community and a team.
And
This
so
is
I've
what it
it's
means.
got a bit it's got to happen. We've got I mean
The
we, you
CEO
know
of
like
Partick's a great guy, by the way. Really good guy.
we got to talk to our friend of the show, John Green. I mean, he's always listening to us. And we've got to get this commissioned. I mean, I think that'd be going around, you know, talking to fan-owned clubs, because that would be that's an that's just feels like it's got comedy, it's got pathos. It's got every, I think that would be an amazing show. So
I also
somehow we
want
got that get commissioned.
if you get it commissioned, I'd like to get the job of pie reviewer.
Mate, you're presenting. Not the pie reviewer. You're the front of it. I just think it would be brilliant.
Mark, that is what
Do
you've
you...
just touched on. That is one of our big awards each year, is best food outlet out of Wimbledon. That so like all these other awards that do like, you know, player of the year, player of the year, all that sort of stuff, most improved, all that stuff. We do the best food outlet. We do the Matt. What are the awards got called? The
Well,
Harry Pell Award.
we've got the Harry Pell Award for best off-field contribution, and it's named after Harry Pell because of last season non-football contribution. So it's named after Harry Pell because he kicked the ball at the franchise flats.
It was
Matt,
the
it was a
most
miss hit. Didn't know
wonderful, wonderful moment.
it. Was
We
obviously
also,
just for the record, Matt. It obviously was just miss hit
yeah,
continually.
miss
He
it. Yeah,
obviously was aiming at
it
the
wasn't.
goal. No way was he blasting the ball really hard at the franchise fans,
He
because
was
that
doing
would
it.
be wrong, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
Obviously.
we wouldn't know. He's just well, he's always had a bit of a dodgy foot every now and again as Harry Pell. He's spare with his head. But we also have like, you know, the club person of the year because the amount of work that we do behind the scenes. So, you know, last year we called it the Mandy now because the people on reception, Mandy at reception, the person who does the ticketing, just honestly, people are emailing at like 9 o'clock on a Friday night and she's getting back straight away. The dedication of our people behind the scenes is amazing.
I left our season tickets at my partner's place, and she lives a bit away. And on Saturday, I was like, I've left season tickets, you know. And I just turned up with about a quarter of an hour before the game because I was searching all the house before I realised. I walked in there and just went, I'm really, really sorry. I've done this thing. It's really bad. I've left the season tickets. It's my fault. They said, what's your number? Where'd you? I said, this is my number. This is my bit. And they went, that's fine. We'll print it out. Here's your ticket. I'm like, thank you very much. It was the most stress-free thing ever.
Yeah, and that's it, and because they're all so dedicated, they're just wonderful people. This year we gave it to Maddie Sweetman, who works on the AFC Wimbledon Foundation, and she does just some beautiful work with the community there. So you know, there's just some wonderful people out there that are behind the scenes. But I want to know. I wanted to go back to this thing with the franchise. So you work all over the place. Have you gigged in that city?
I would outside, just outside, there's a venue called The Stables that was originally set up by Johnny Dankworth and Cleo Lane. And it's a venue that's actually punches above its weight. And, you know, it's a community place and it's good. And I have performed there. And they're a little bit arts and crafts, I'll be honest with you. And I mentioned their team and how it was an utter disgrace that they had it, and what they did was utterly wrong, and every one of them in the room knew it. And there was a little sort of silence. Oh, there's a little, and then we carried on. And we afterwards, the guy who ran the venue just come out and said, "You shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have said that." Everyone else was just like, "No, it's fine. We appreciate you saying it, and that's fine. We understand that."
Yeah.
So it's. And I, of course, wore the shirt while I was doing book signings. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was, I regarded the opportunity as a chance for a provocation, I must confess.
Yeah. I can't imagine you being provocative like that, Mark. Doesn't suit you at all.
But I mean, I think it's what well, as I go back to that thing, every other gig, when if I mention AFC, so someone will say proper club.
Yeah. Well, we are.
Recognition amongst the football community is quite amazing.
Yeah. And what we've, and like I say, I mean, it's the one thing, you know, you can go anywhere and say that you support AFC Wimbledon, and most people are going to be like, oh, decent. No one's going to give you stick. There is, like, we're a proper club.
Oh, I did get stick from someone once.
Really?
Yeah. Kings Meadow. What about Kings Meadow?
Oh, yeah.
Kingstonian.
I was like, oh, really, mate? I thought we saved you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You don't get stick from Mark Steele, then?
No, the Palace contingent are actually, bizarrely, despite their fantastic success in the FA, which I was so pleased. I was genuinely pleased for them, actually, because it was like, come on, South London. Do you know what I mean?
No.
It really was. And I think the next, was it the day after we had a playoff?
It's the following.
Yeah, it was following the FA.
Yeah.
We had a playoff, and it was like South London rises. Do you know what I mean? And I was pleased for Charlton as well. It's like,
Yeah.
come on.
Nobody's mentioned that enough, I think. You know, the fact that this year, how many of the domestic trophies, domestic winners in the effort in the at Wembley have been South Londoners. You know what, there are five trophies at five Wembley finals in domestic football. Three of them have gone to South London.
Yep.
In the top, you know.
And I've still not got that tattoo.
Go, oh, Matt. What's the tattoo you're gonna get? Tell me
well,
everything.
See what's
Matt,
happened.
Matt was cool, Matt.
I had this thing, well, because my daughter's been coming along. She's had a season ticket, although she's 14, so she's stopped now because she's got other things to be doing on a Saturday afternoon, apparently. But she said, "Dad, if we get a trophy, you've got to get a tattoo." And I was just like, "Yeah," because in my mind, when I'm thinking trophy, I'm thinking like, you know, the FA Cup or, you know, the EFL trophy or something like that. Oh, I don't know. But anyhow, so we got a trophy. So now I've got to get a tattoo.
And
And
what is
already
the tattoo?
I feel sore. I feel sore already
What
thinking about
is
it.
the tattoo you're going to get?
I'm trying to work it out because the flag seems quite involved to me. That seems like quite a big thing.
Badge. Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah, please.
Because I love tattoos. And I've been contemplating one for a while, which is on the shoulder,
Yeah.
Vinnie Jones, Gazza's bollocks. On
No, Mark, you're not getting it. You don't understand. That's really complicated, very painful.
the So
Well,
I
do you
think,
not
Adam,
think
that
that that's
we've
an
heard that, haven't
iconic
we?
image?
That is an iconic image. I was just thinking like a yellow and blue dot would be quite nice, wouldn't it? Just like a
Mate,
small.
that could mean that you support Ukraine.
I know. There is that thing as well. I feel sore already. I haven't even got it. I can feel sore.
Adam, I think we've heard that now, that Mark Thomas, who we
Oh.
highly regard, has said that. And how can you argue with Mark Thomas, Adam? Don't you
I'm
agree? I mean, I think
not going to
that's the only.
argue. I'm not going to argue with Mark Thomas for sure. So whatever
No,
he
I definitely
said
can't
goes.
agree with
Well,
him.
someone has to.
Matthew, I'll tell you what. I'll do it
Oh.
if you will.
Oh, what the fuck is that about?
Come on, I'll do it if you will.
So, our listeners out there, if you want to donate to the Mark Thomas and Matthew Cooper Tattoo Awards, then you can at any point come through and we'll take donations. So we'll be looking for it on all our social media channels. If that happens, then Mark Thomas and Matthew, maybe, and display it on the pitch.
I
Walk
tell you
onto
what,
the pitch.
I tell you what, why don't what you should do is have it as a fundraiser.
What is wrong with
Fundraiser.
everybody? Wait a minute, it's just gone from
Fundraiser,
writing
right.
a little yellow and blue tattoo to flipping. I'm not. Listen, we have to agree on what the tattoo is, and it ain't flipping Vinnie Jones
Don't agree with.
squeezing Gazza's
As a fundraiser, I mean, I think you'd only do it if you raised a certain amount. You'd have to put a fundraising target on it. Well, how much would you do, Matt? How much would you have to raise for
It
that, for the club?
depends. It depends what the tattoo is, but I'll tell you what it ain't. We just said
Yeah,
what we said.
if it was Gazza, Vinnie Jones grabbing Gazza's bollocks, and Mark Thomas is in for this, he's up for it. How much would our fan base have to raise, being that we need to raise money for the players' budget, for you to do it?
There is literally no money to reach that. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I'm feeling sore. I was just feeling sore a little bit on my arm where I thought it was going to be, but now you're talking about a shoulder thing. Have you
It
got a tattoo?
doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. You've not had a tattoo. It doesn't hurt, honestly. A little bit, but not much.
Yeah, I'm a real wuss. Well, we'll think on this. I see what
Matthew, you
people are
made a
trying to do.
mistake.
I see what people are trying to do.
No, but the
I see
mistake you
this.
made was you should have said no at the point you were asked by your daughter to get a tattoo, because that's what I definitely would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, I think we should rope you into this.
Yes. I'm definitely not being roped into this. No way. I'm
Listen,
putting my foot down.
If we all do it, then we can raise some serious money.
No,
Hey,
that's not
Mark.
true.
If
Like, we've got about two, we've got about three
we all
listeners.
do it.
Okay, how much would you say was serious money, Niall? How much would you say was serious money we need to get?
Can you tattoo? I'd say 10 grand, Matt. Go on, that's a lot.
Can I say 50k? Can I go
50K.
impossible?
50K. John Green, if you are listening,
Yeah,
Matt and
he's well
Mark
up there.
Thomas will get a tattoo, right, of
No,
Vinnie
no, no,
Jones
no,
having
no, no, no,
gasaholics
no, 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 no.
for
We've
50K.
not agreed on that. We've not agreed on that. We've not agreed on that. I would
I've
rather
just
get
heard
the
that. I
badge.
heard that
I'd rather get
agreement.
the badge. I'd get the badge. I'd get the badge. Mark, what's the badge on your shirt? Because that looks like it's not the full.
That is the
Yeah,
Wembley shirt.
it's the Wembley shirt. So maybe that one looks quite nice. That's got to be better than. Oh man, I'm in so
Does
much
Mark
pain.
Thomas does Mark Thomas look like he's happy with that agreement?
No.
Mark Thomas can't come on here and say you get a tattoo of Vinnie Jones grabbing Gazza's bollocks.
I didn't say you should. I didn't tell you to. It was a group decision where we arrived at a consensus whereby this would be a noble fundraising effort if you inked yourself on behalf of the club.
50K.
I genuinely can't help but feel you'd be taking some notes out of Donald Trump's book here. I've seen how this works.
Mate,
I say it's true.
if I was
And
taking notes out
what?
of Donald Trump's book, I wouldn't be looking for your consent.
No.
Michael,
All right,
unlike all the rest of it.
I tell you what, Mark, because we're serious on this, we'll come up with a consensus on what that tattoo is. A consensus. You understand what that is? And then we'll do it. And we'll raise some money for it.
Who's involved in this consensus making?
Me and
I'm
you.
not, I'm not, I'm out, I'm out. I'm not getting involved in this.
Me, you, and I'll have a word with my daughter as well. She was the one who first did the bet, so I've got to pass
She
it.
would be well up for the Vinnie Jones Gascoigne thing, Matt.
If she's brought into it, I feel that she should have the deciding vote.
My double votes. You should have said no ages ago, Matthew. What were you thinking?
Oh dear me, imagine this. Anyhow,
What about the benefactor elbow?
listen, I'm just thinking, right? We could just
The
get the elbow.
benefactor elbow,
We could
that's
get a,
quite
we could just
iconic.
get an elbow. We could just get the elbow done. Just the elbow. No.
Or the elbow with Vinnie Jones and Gascoigne.
I was just thinking I was that's just turning into a scene, isn't it? Of Wimbledon atrocities over the years.
That's what that is what happens though, apparently. When you get one tattoo, you want more. So maybe that's what's going to happen. You could become the Wimbledon tattooed man.
No, I think you've got a good point here. What is the other iconic image of Wimbledon? That if you're going beyond Gascoigne and Vinnie Jones, what's the next iconic Wimbledon image?
Dave Bassett saving the penalty, obviously.
Or holding up the FA Cup. Yeah. Okay, we'll think on.
Or Noah.
Or, yes, or what about Womble Till I Die? The fence.
The fence is an iconic image, yeah.
Yeah, the fence.
I feel it lacks the gravitas of Vinny's nuts hold.
It does, Matt. I mean, if you were doing the Vinny versus Vinny and Gascoigne, you're talking potentially serious money because people would chip in for that quite a lot. The
I
Womble
don't.
Till I Die Gates.
Yes, some people are not fans of that, so.
Yeah, you see this. This whole conversation has taken a horrible turn. But I was just thinking, there's got to be other ways. other ways of raising money. I mean, you know, some people have written best-selling books and turned them into films and donated to Wimbledon. I think that seems like a more plausible thing that we should be looking to do. You know, and the new series that Mark's fronting up, you know, going around visiting fans' own club, reporting on pies and such like that. When that gets commissioned, I think that's a way that we're going to generate money for the club. That's, you know, that's how we're going to do
And
it.
I'm in the secret group that won't that Niall didn't mention to hopefully raise some money for the first team.
But in a weird way, it's things like this though that does, you know, does draw in attention, does bring in a few quid. But I mean, when the pitch burst, are just going out there. I mean, that was amazing how we managed to how Graham was managed to put that together and, you know, bringing that amount of money. That's fantastic.
Indeed, when Harry Pell had his missed shot, the fundraising drives to help his foot.
Curious misfiring.
It
Just
does.
get Harry Pell. Anyhow, yeah. But anyhow, it's been a pleasure. I'm thinking now we're going to draw this to a close. We could add and you can absolutely edit out the last 10 minutes.
No way. I know which bit I'm editing in this tiny, tiny portion.
And I've got to ask, Mark, before we let you go, what's next? What's your next project? What are you working on?
Oh, mate. I've just directed a play that's going up to Edinburgh, which is
Fantastic.
really good with this performance artist called Vic Melody. I'm just rehearsing for a play that was written for me, which is a one-man show written for me by Ed Edwards, and I'm doing a stand-up tour. As well, and other things.
Will we see you down at Plough Lane? Yeah, we see you down at Plough Lane gigging.
Well, actually, I was talking to Jonesy about this before the playoffs, and he said, "Oh, Jeff Northcott's done a gig. You've got to do a gig as well." Yeah, what I love about Jonesy is he's got this. I've seen Primal Scream too many times. Right, do you know what I mean? Got that energy too. I absolutely adore him. He's great.
Yeah, I caught up with him the other day on Friday. We're doing this exhibition, sort of Wimbledon history in one of the units at Wimbledon Quarter. It opens this weekend to coincide with the tennis, so people can see a proper sport whilst they're in the area. And we were chatting about the football kits because we're exhibiting some of the football kits. So we were just going through that and all the shirts and all the sponsors and the first kits that he's had. And his knowledge is encyclopedic when it comes to football kits. And obviously he's designed, I think, the last 20 or so of them. So, but he's such a passion that he's brilliant that.
What I bumped into him outside. I was going for a walk and I bumped into him outside the ground, and he'd just been talking to someone about interviewing someone for a comms position. And he do you know his passion? You're right, his passion is it, because he's just like, "All right, Mark, I've just been interviewing someone for comms." I said, "Oh, great, how'd it go?" He said, "I'll blow their mind. I'll blow their mind. Because I tell them we're a fan-owned club. This is about socialism. This is about community. This is about love. And for 90 minutes every week, someone kicks a ball about."
Now, unfortunately, this is only an audio-only podcast. But honestly, if we can just describe the way that Mark Thomas just reacted there, that was absolute spot-on Mark Jones. It was brilliant.
He is fantastic.
But what a bloke. What a bloke.
Totally. I'm pleased he's now got a position within the club because I think he was doing a lot of stuff voluntary and it, you know, like it creeps when you start getting involved in it, you know, it creeps, you know, you start giving more and more to like, we do this podcast. No one's asked us to do it and no one wants it necessarily, but we keep doing it because it's just that pure love. It just creeps into your life.
But what a brilliant. I've actually quoted Jonesy with those words and said it to people. I said, "That's if you want to understand it, that's it."
Yeah, totally. Sorry, Nye.
Was going to say, Mark, you'll have to send me the name of that. I'm up in Edinburgh for a bit, so I must come and catch a show. So let me know what it is, and I'll pop round, pop in.
Well, there's Ordinary Decent Criminal, which is the show I'm doing, and Trouble, Struggle, Bubble and Squeak, which is the name of the show I've directed with Vic Melody.
Cool.
And that takes place in Whitehawk as part of the Whitehawk, as and that involves the team because you know they've got their key moment thing. I don't know if you know that about Whitehawk.
No.
They're very funny because they do all these chants, right? So the club, it's a council estate, and one of the things is homophobia. We say no. Homophobia. We say no. Homophobia. We say no. Ooh, we say no. And they run through it all: sexism, racism, transphobia, Little Hampton. We say no. And they do all of that. And they're pretty sort of right on club, but they have this bit which they've nicked from somewhere, but I can't remember who told me it was. But when there's a corner kick and they've got a chance to score, they bring out the keys and rattle them. Key moments.
Hey,
Oh my!
all my days.
You, we sit, we sit next to someone who's on the Don's Trust board, and every time there's a corner, he brings his keys out and
Does
rattles them.
he? Does he?
Every
It comes
he's been
from.
doing it for forever.
I love
It
that
comes
though.
from St. Pauli. It comes from St. Pauli. That's where
Is
it
it
began.
over in
Yes.
Hamburg?
Yeah.
There you are. Another
That's
one
where
on
it
our
comes
list
from.
to visit.
That's a fantastic football fact, by the way, Noel.
The best thing about that is we have one member of the Don's Trust who rattles the keys, another member of the Don's Trust who absolutely hates the keys being rattling, and they literally almost have a fight every time it happens. It's so good.
Is that, do you know what that's the beautiful thing about football and football matches is those moments that you have between the people next to you. And over the course of that time, you have these little moments and you might only see these people every other week during the season, and then off season you don't see them, and it's just, but when you come back into the ground, you oh, all right, how you doing? And then there's little moments that you look around and you go, oh yeah, I recognise that you were the person who did that or whatever. So
But I think that's so different, though, compared. I remember back to the Premier League days, and now, the Premier League days, it was like you kind of vaguely knew the person you sat next to. Now, not only do you know the people around, but there's a big community. It's much, much deeper than it ever was in the Premier League because, everybody's put a shift in. We've all done something. We've all tried to do something special, and I think everybody appreciates that.
I had this thing that there's a little thing which is because I'm a relative newcomer. Do you know what I mean? To the game. And I started coming when Plough Lane opened up again, right? And so I was like, okay, this is exciting. But there are people who I've met and people who I know who whenever there's a home game, we meet at the same spot at half time, every game. And it got to the point when last year I was in Australia and my mate sent a photograph of them standing in the spot going, "Where the fuck are you?" And I love that.
Yeah,
That
it's
is
beautiful, isn't
quality.
it? It is beautiful. What a magical place Plough Lane is. Anyhow, guys, on that note, I am going to bring us to a close. It's Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I look forward to meeting you in the tattoo parlor or at Plough Lane. Plough Lane might come first. It's been great. Niall, thank you very much. Mon frère, always lovely to
Thank you,
see you.
Maddie.
Adam, there's only a small amount of editing to do, so which is spot on for you. I'm Matt Cooper. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.